Oh, look at that. I knew something about a punk band.
Just some old fat drunk dudes jumping up and down.
This tree just planted itself right on top of the cement.
I did watch a YouTube video today.
My dad mashed potatoed
of
Enema
Chris Carrava.
Aaron doesn't know who Chris Carrava is. It's so good. That's great.
Welcome back to the Punk Tree, everybody. This is Aaron, and I am joined here by my co-hosts and employees, Mike.
Yeah. Jesse.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. This is Mike.
And that's Jesse. Thank you guys for all the wonderful work that you do for me.
Jesse's wearing a tank top.
It's
real tank toppy.
It's
is that a tank top, or is that like what we used to call wife beaters?
Yes.
That was a big miss. That was pretty bad.
Because yes was not an appropriate answer to that question?
No, just to use that term, that was a pretty wild one.
Well, I mean, I said that's what we used to call it. We don't call it that anymore.
Yeah.
And if I said undershirt, you would think I'm thinking of like a white t-shirt. It's not specific enough to what Jesse's wearing.
I believe it's an A shirt.
Yeah, I am. I am not.
How many people know A shirt, though?
I think most people who have shopped or purchased men's undergarments would know.
Okay, so Jesse, is that a tank top or an A shirt?
This is an A shirt.
Okay, it's navy blue, so it kind of threw me off. I thought you were just, you know, trying to show off your sculpted guns, Jesse. Mm-hmm. That's all.
Well, I had gotten ready to go to bed.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm just in my underwear because that's how I sleep in bed pretty often, most often. And but then I remembered that we were going to talk together thusly. And so then I stopped getting in bed and I came here.
So instead, you're just here in your underwear, all sexy for the Punk Tree, which is you are the Chris Carrava of our show, Jesse. You are the Chris Carrava of our show. All right, okay. We have a lot to talk about on this episode, and we probably won't even finish the conversation because a lot of awesome stuff's been happening. A lot of really cool things, and the coolest thing is we have been able to see a lot of live music. And so we will get to that conversation soon, and we'll talk about some of the shows we've seen, a lot of them together, which has been a really fun thing. But before we do that, how about some music that we have not even seen, we have only heard, and it hasn't been live, but it's been recorded. How about that?
Like, you're talking about like what we've been inserting in our ear holes recently?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I'm on board now.
Cool. Well, why don't you go first, Aaron?
Okay, cool. One band I've actually been listening to a little bit recently is Dead Kennedys. And this just happened. I was listening to a podcast and they mentioned Cambodia. And obviously the song Holiday in Cambodia started playing in my head. So I immediately switched from the podcast to the Dead Kennedys. And I've regularly been listening to them since. A fun side story, later that day in one of my classes, I was talking to a girl and asking her for a music suggestion for our class. And she didn't know. And I was like, what do you listen to? And she said, the first thing she said was punk. And I, thinking she was going to say like Blink-182, asked her, so like what? Dead Kennedys. And we made a much deeper connection. And it was great. We shared music together. It was awesome.
That's really cool. That's super cool.
Nice,
it was one of my favorite things when I first started teaching, actually, it was finding students that I could get into music talk with. So
you've been to school for a year or two, and you know you've seen it all. And at his coming, and you'll go far back east, your time don't crawl. Play ethnic jazz with the Rachel Snares on your bogram stereo.
Oh man, I have been listening a ton to one of my favorite bands just put out a new record. Kind of. It's not a record. Emery is one of my favorite bands, and they released music in a new and unique way. What they did for this album, it's called Rub Some Dirt on It. And you cannot purchase it. All you can do is you can go watch it You could just go watch it because the album, they released it by recording it live on video and a really a great audio capture. And so, like, it was an experience I'd never had before, listening to a brand new album while simultaneously watching them actually record exactly what I'm hearing. Although there was obviously engineering and post-production mixing and stuff, but what I mean is, like, what they're playing is what you're hearing, and it's their new music. So it's not like, oh, I know these songs and now I'm getting to see them live. It's like, this is the very first time I'm experiencing this. And the album's great. Oh my gosh, it's really fun. And it was a very cool new way to experience releasing music.
Wait, so is it great or is it fun or is it both?
Both.
Okay.
It's great. Wicked. It's wicked awesome.
It's great and it's fun and it's great fun.
Perfect. I have been hearing many things. One thing I've been listening to a lot is I did buy some Too Bad Eugene vinyl at one of the shows that we will talk about at some point. So I've been spinning that quite a bit. But I really want to mention something I did today. I was listening to the podcast, and I can't remember the name of the podcast, but we'll throw a link in. It's a singer from another band that we've heard recently, Touche Amore. He has a podcast where he talks about artists and like their first, how they got into music. And I was listening to the episode with Dustin Kinsrew, and they were talking about the song Round Here by Counting Crows, which Kinsrew covered on his live covers album a few years ago. And we heard him play live. I heard him play it at least once or twice live. Mm-hmm. And so they were talking about it and like referencing like the version everybody knows from the radio. And then this acoustic version that's a little more rare. And so I went down a deep dive and I spent probably like 45 minutes or so listening to like a bunch of different versions of the song by a few different artists and even some random people just like on YouTube. And it's just such an amazing, amazing song. Like I dug into some of like the song meaning websites and stuff about it. He did a VH1 Storytellers years ago, talking about it being about like being an artist while everybody around you is like doing the thing you're supposed to do. Mm-hmm. You know, like you're going for it and you're like washing dishes to like scrape by, but your friends are like going to college and gonna have careers, and you really believe in this thing though, and that makes you seem like a crazy person to a lot of people.
They're gonna have an office.
Yeah, right. And so it's just an incredible song, and it's worth, if anybody is like me or I think like you guys and likes to like really really know what an artist is trying to say, it's a great song to put on. And it's a great song to put on and just like listen while reading all the lyrics.
She lives alone on her private archipelago with her palm trees and her seashells. And she sits in the waves all day. She says she's scared of dying. Well, I'm scared of dying. So she sends a boat out on the sea with a little note from me. It says, why are all the girls so hungry? So why are all the girls so hungry? And why are all the boys so lonely? And why can't anybody see me? Why? Why?
Why? That's great. That's great. Well, you're also having a nice sip there. What have you got, Mike? What are you drinking?
Oh, yeah. So I've got this cool thing happening at my job. We have these, we call them secret pals. But like once a month, you have somebody who you secretly are
that
like...
That sounds like it could...
that sounds like an HR problem.
That sounds like an HR problem.
It's you're like paired with somebody, or you're not even paired. You have somebody in this. So they have somebody that's like random and secret, and you just secret. Like you do something nice, like a small gift or something for them once a month. And so we filled out like a survey of stuff you're into, what you like. And, you know, I think I'm a pretty cheap date because I included that I liked beer on there. And so I get like, I got one today, actually. I get like a six pack of like, you know, mixed pint cans of various beers once a month, just left on my desk at work, which is pretty cool. So this one is actually from a couple weeks ago, my last drop off. And it is by a brewery here in San Diego County. It's actually in Carlsbad. And I'm going to pronounce it the best I could because I actually looked it up. It's a French word and it's pronounced Roulier. Roulier.
Are you? Roulier. You have to vomit? That's what's
yeah,
going
it
on.
Sounds like vomit. Roulier. And so I think that means roller, basically. And so this beer is it's called 2x2. It's actually a collaboration with Hopsbauer, which is a brewery in San Diego. It's called 2x2, and it is a double dry hopped, double IPA, and it's very good, but it's powerful. It's like a very, very astringent, almost like hoppy. It reminds me of an old beer by Green Flash called Palate Wrecker. Actually,
That reminds you of Palate Wrecker.
It reminds me of Palate Wrecker.
Back
how,
in like
how big is it?
This is 8.5%.
Palate Wrecker was like 14.
No, I think it was 10. I think it was 10. But this is, you know, this is like that. It's a high alcohol flavor, but also very like soapish, but not bad. Yeah. How about you, Aaron? You got something?
I'm drinking Super Sunset IPA from Alesmith. It's a West Coast IPA made with Mosaic, Simcoe, and Galaxy hops, I think I read on the can. But it's delicious.
Where did you say it was? What was the brewery?
Alesmith.
Oh, nice. I was just I didn't quite catch which one you had it from. And I was like, oh, we've all got something local today. Nothing out of town.
Yes.
Because I've got a... The Pupil, which is an IPA from Society, which is another, I'd say up and coming, but they were up and coming like almost a decade ago. They're pretty well established here in San Diego, reputable for sure. They're not really that small. They're mid to large for a craft brewery, I would say. I have been enjoying this for sure. And The Pupil is a tropical hop triumph. Bright notes of guava and mango with a clean and dry finish. Again, not reading this from the can. This is just kind of my just off the cuff, just kind of thoughts about it. It's kind of clean and dry in the finish, though, and it really makes this a crowd favorite since day one.
Wow. Jesse, I would just really like to commend you on your ability to describe the palette of beer so eloquently.
So do I. I mean, it's amazing, Jesse.
Mm-hmm. You should think about writing these descriptions for breweries.
My actual take on it actually does kind of match up with some of the things that are there. It really does.
Wait. So you read something from the can?
No. At this point, I'll tell you what the can says because it matches up with what I just had said before, which were my own thoughts.
Okay.
Right. So here's what the can has to say. Basically, it says, this beer's pretty juicy in like a tropical sort of a way, but also the finish doesn't have that juicy finish. It's dry.
I hate when people say sort of a way. Like, what is the A for? Sort of a way. We don't need that.
I don't know.
We don't need that.
I don't even know what I said. Are we cutting it out? I don't even know.
No, we're not. All right. Well, let's get into the chat. So we have just had the pleasure of going to a bunch of live music. We're going to another show tomorrow. We are going to another show tomorrow, and
oh man,
it's been great to go and be in person. And so I think the way we planned is we're going to do it chronologically.
Right. So, we didn't go to one show. We're talking a plethora.
We've been to a lot. And so we're going to hit these as I would, we're not going to do it as quickly as we can. I want to be thorough and remember and share. But you know, we'll kind of walk through it and we'll see how far we get this evening. But we're going to start with an artist that was a standalone show. And it's an artist that it's pretty cool because in the time that we've been creating the punk tree, this is a band and an artist that we've actually talked about pretty consistently for over a year. Mm-hmm. I'm excited to share that we got to go see, drumroll, somebody. We got to go see David Bazan, singer and songwriter known for the group Pedro the Lion. We got to see him not only as a solo act, but in an extremely intimate show.
Oh yeah, it was very exclusive. Only 40 people were allowed to attend.
Right, and I didn't know what to expect. If anybody who's listening wants to kind of dig into him, you can buy his music everywhere. I really encourage you to buy his records wherever you can find them. They're on everything from Amazon. I think it's even better if you buy them from his website. Mm-hmm. But there's also a documentary. I think it's on Prime Video, like Amazon Prime Video,
yes,
called Strange Negotiations, and it outlines kind of the project of his life the last several years of touring by playing a lot of home shows and things like home shows. And that's really what we were a part of, was like kind of like a home show, but it was a little bigger.
Yeah. I think about the same number of people that would be at a home show, just spread out because of our current pandemic situation.
Yeah. It was so intimate that he showed up late. And there was no question about like why the show was starting late.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we were all just sitting there.
Oh, what are they taking forever to like set up the gear? Come on, backline stuff. Let's go. Get. What are you waiting for? Tune your gear. Whatever it is.
And he didn't even really set up. He just walked in
with a gig bag.
With a gig bag, opened his guitar case, pulled it out, started playing, stopped, and said, "I know it's hot, but we're going to turn these fans off. Also, I don't think I need to plug in here."
He didn't plug in. Yep. He didn't use a microphone. In. Nothing.
No. And I was amazed at how big and loud his voice was.
Yeah, he's got
like he didn't have to contend with his guitar at all. It didn't seem like.
Nope. And at first I was kind of worried, like, oh man, like I kind of want to hear the fullness of like a great sound system. And I actually really like when there's like a singer-songwriter with just an acoustic guitar, but it's powerful in a venue.
Yeah.
I like that sound. And this was not that. It was almost like I have an artist friend who makes a lot of books of his art, and he never uses bold text, and he never makes the font bigger for titles or anything. And like part of the reason is he's like, if you do that, then the audience stops working to like engage.
Mm-hmm.
And it made me think of that when he came up and started playing just unplugged, truly unplugged.
Yeah.
I was like, oh man, we are like actually kind of working to like pay attention. And there was something I think about that.
Yeah. It felt right for sure for the venue, for the time, for the space, for the people. Yeah. It felt appropriate for sure to not plug in. And it was, I'm so glad he didn't.
Yeah. The venue is also interesting, for sure. That was its own part of the experience of seeing him.
Oh, yeah. Especially considering kind of his past and his relationship with Christian music. Because we did see him in a church. And
yes, right.
Anyone who's familiar with Dave Bazan knows that he sort of started out kind of in this...
like Christian alternative kind of.
Yeah, but he wasn't even like totally full in, right? It was kind of ambivalent whether they were a Christian group or not, but the Christian music scene really took to him because he was popular, he was a good artist, they were a good band, and the message was one that was like easy to sell to a Christian audience. But then they kind of abandoned him. And I think Mike can probably talk a little bit more about that than I can.
Yeah, I mean, I think that he was really young, and he talks about this in different interviews and things. And his own worldview was not, like, fully developed during that time. And so, you know, if you tie yourself to anything too tightly, you will have a hard time with the disappointment of the imperfection of that thing. And, you know, we could use all kinds of different terms. I think that the most honest term, especially if you're hearing him talk about it, because that was a part of the show, is he engaged us in conversation. Like, he's literally having conversations with some of us as we're sitting there.
Yeah.
I would say he... simply put it, he clearly expresses that he, you know, doesn't believe in a God. He doesn't not believe that there's something, it seems. And he, you know, has attended things like, I think he said he went to like a Unitarian Universalist church, and he kind of enjoyed the experience. It was a refreshing kind of thing.
Yeah.
And he definitely wrestles with faith and his own sort of belief history, even on his most recent record, Phoenix. So it was interesting seeing him in a church that itself is kind of a deconstructed physical church as well.
Oh yeah, right? I mean, they were selling us beer, and like,
yeah,
the pastor actually sold me a beer.
The pastor sold us a beer. A few beers.
He didn't sell it. He was just providing it.
No.
I believe we compensated him for the cost of the beer.
We paid for the beer, but it was kind of funny to sit in like church pews while we're like drinking beers and like crushing the cans and sticking them where the Bibles and hymnals like used to be.
Yeah, in the back of the pew. Yep. that was nice.
Maybe I'll try and find a picture. I took a picture of it. Maybe I'll put it on Instagram or something.
Make sure you tag the church.
Nice.
When you do it.
Nice. And I also think there's this interesting play there because, you know, he's coming in as somebody who has, you know, quote unquote, like kind of left faith, right? Or something like that. You know, everyone who's there is sort of a representative of kind of this like Gen X to millennial group of people who, you know, I would guess a lot of the people there are people who have experienced some form of like deconstruction or whatever we want to call it. People who have wrestled with faith in some way.
I think everyone's on somewhere on the spectrum of between full on like evangelical Christian and like right before you hit agnostic or atheist.
Yeah, I think so. Including that church itself, which is fascinating, because I think that the church itself that we went to, I know I have a lot of friends who've been a part of like the Cultivated conference that happens in that exact same space, which is kind of like when people hear about the evangelical church in America, this is part of a group of people locally in San Diego that are like not that at all, sort of the other end of the spectrum that really rejects a lot of what we have seen with Christian nationalism and other stuff. So it was an incredible show as well. He played, I would say he played songs kind of across the discography. Played some real old Pedro the Lion stuff. He played some newer things. Honestly, he played probably 3 or 4 songs I didn't really know, which was kind of great. Because I wasn't trying to like hear the track. I was just listening to the performance, and I really like that.
Yeah, I actually have a few like voice memos that I just recorded of a few like snippets of songs.
We'll definitely
be like interjecting a few of those throughout the conference. In fact, you probably already heard at least one of them as we were discussing this. But so we'll get a few of those in.
That's a great.
And those are live in the room. So you might even hear beer cans clanking against the pews.
Yeah. One thing that if I could like critique the night at all was definitely that he had no music to sell, which I thought was so like wild. Like I went there fully like hoping, because his music's available to an extent, but like I'm pretty actively collecting vinyl right now, and I was like, man, I would love to get some of his other albums on vinyl that are not available. Maybe he'll have them with him on tour. And I think the only thing he was selling was like a poster.
A poster.
And I was like, man, I wanted to give you my money. I really wanted to.
Well, and that was a show that all of us were at together, and it was the first show that we'd been to like in person in 18 months or something, if not a little more. Yeah. But we went to we have so many more bands to talk about and shows that we attended. Let's go. Next of which is the band. It's the band. It's our band.
I do not miss this. I do not miss this band when they come. I have missed one of their shows one time that I could have gone to, and it was literally because my dad passed away. It was the only reason that I've ever missed seeing this band. And so we did get to really, I mean, Bazan was amazing. It was a great show. It was also kind of a warm-up show because it was small. Mm-hmm. Then we got to see Thrice at the Observatory, which is like a full-on big show.
How many people fit in there? Two or 3,000
people? It was a little bit of a nervous place because that was definitely the first time I had really been around a crowd like that. Since everything's gone haywire. So, but oh my gosh, they did not disappoint.
Yeah. Never have.
And I was like, I mentioned that podcast with the Touche guy. He asked Kenzru on that show about the rehearsal because they recorded it when they were about to launch into the tour, and Kenzru said that they had been rehearsing every single day. Like, and you could just tell it was like a pent up. We're ready to perform. We got this new album, Horizons East. It's complicated. Like there's some timing stuff and Kinzer talks about it on that show about how like playing and singing it when you've created an album during a pandemic where the parts were not necessarily jammed out all the time is like a whole new experience. And so I loved how just dialed in all of it was.
And they played six songs off of that brand new record. Like a third of their set list was the brand new record. And there was a few songs that I had felt like I wasn't that excited to hear necessarily. Like, there's a few songs on the album I was like, I like the song, nothing wrong with it, but it's like not my favorite. Like, I'd rather you play three or four off the new record that are just my favorites, and then let me hear some of the classics that I also want to hear. However, none of the ones that they ended up playing were disappointing in the least. Like, when I got over my stupid idea of not wanting to hear them all, but it sounded great. Particularly, they started the set. They started the set right off with the top two songs from the record, The Color of the Sky and Scavengers. And
oh my,
everything during those two songs just felt like it was like a pure spectacle, and like the whole room knew that it was.
Yeah.
And it sounded impeccable.
So, I don't ever want the show to sound like the record. I don't, at all. This was like as close to a perfect performance of a track. Because they do have some tracks and things, right?
Yeah.
Like, they are playing to a click because they have some complicated synth things and stuff going on. But it's just like, it's just a wow when they are playing along with a couple of things, and the complement of those things to the live performance, and the complement of the lights and the screens on the stage, it wasn't like a laser show where it was distracting from the music. It was just like, it was like, welcome back. So yeah, I mean, I thought that it was the complement of the lights and the screens and the amazing performance was just a super good kickoff to that show.
They did the smart thing as well, and they jumped right into Artist in the Ambulance right after those top two songs. I don't necessarily agree with the way that people might think about this, but like, I know that there's a huge chunk of fans that are there just there because of the stuff that Thrice was putting out 12, 15 years ago.
Jesse? Jesse, it was that's almost 20.
Yeah, I was going to say that, like, it's, you know, being a Thrice fan for now, like Mike said, 20 years, and it doesn't feel like that sometimes because I don't even know why. Something about the theory of relativity and Einstein and some shit. But I was thinking, like, seeing that show, it's so much different from seeing them at Jerry's Pizza back in 2004, when I was in a 200-person venue listening to all the brand new songs that just came off of The Artist in the Ambulance, and the whole crowd is going crazy, and it's like just that old like teenage adrenaline, testosterone fueled, trying to get the angst out kind of thing. And like a good band should, I think, like Jesse was like starting to get at, they've progressed in like so many ways. Like musically, they are so much better than they were back then. Lyrically, with all the changes that Dustin has gone through in the past decade or more. And the fact that that guy is always just searching and reading and learning and trying to find truth. Every aspect of the band has changed, and the experience of the concert has changed with that. I don't know exactly how to,
you know,
pinpoint it, but
you just said something. I thought of a word. I've been exploring the idea of like learning myself a little bit more. Like, do I want to continue learning things in like a formal way, or do we learn things informally? And how do you, I'm a director of professional learning, but how do I learn, right? If I'm the person in charge of this thing. And so as I'm wrestling with that, I've had a few conversations with some different people in academia and some people in some, you know, leadership roles. And the idea of being a professor, I used to think that that's what I wanted to do someday for like a little while. And now I realize that's not what I want to do. I think that Dustin Kinsrew in many ways is kind of functioning in my life, and maybe in yours as well, in some ways as a professor. He's a person who's like learning on the edge of something and producing work that then a lot of us come to almost like we're coming to the well, right? Like, hey, I'm trying to navigate something, and there's this person ahead of me who is sort of trying to, you know, has the space, the ability, and some talent to be a fullback that's pushing through, processing some things, and then synthesizing it into something that maybe more simply I can understand, and I can take on. And I feel like one of the things I love is that he's been doing that since I was so young. And you know, when we, you know, listened to Identity Crisis or whatever back in the day, it was there. And when I got to grieving from losing a parent, Major Minor was there. And when I got to, you know, my own like wrestling with the world and what it means, you know, like To Be Everywhere is To Be Nowhere is there. And album after album, it seems like it's tracking with where I am at personally, trying to take on the world.
I can't follow that up except to say, yes, definitely I'm right there. That is well said.
Thanks, Jesse. That's so nice of you.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, so
I almost couldn't get that out of my mouth because my teeth are melting from the hops in this beer. Like my teeth are like getting soft. Sure. Oh
man. Stripping the enamel right off.
Did you have any songs specifically from the set list that stood out that maybe you were most excited to hear or definitely most memorable? Maybe, yeah. What stood out in your memory other than we mentioned a couple songs already, but what was yours?
I think Scavengers. That was a song that, like, I don't know, this whole album is, the last few Thrice albums have taken me a few listens to catch on to.
Are you having trouble like nudging your way? Like, it's like a kid that climbs a tree and you're sitting on the branch and you're kind of scooting out and you're getting nervous out on the edge of the limb of the punk tree. Is it like too far out there that it takes you a while to feel like, okay, I belong here?
Yeah. I'm very nervous about like what people might think about me if I'm listening to something that's not Death by Stereo.
Okay. Hey, that's one way to say it.
Yeah, but Scavengers started really clicking with me before the show, and then seeing them play it live just really kind of put that last nail in there.
Yeah, dude, it's almost like watching like old like Zeppelin or Rolling Stones, how like just dudes dancing around on the stage with their guitars. Like that's kind of how it was. It's just like a rock and roll song, you know, it's fun. It's a song that's like fresh. It doesn't sound like anything else they've done. It's like, here we are.
Oh, absolutely.
Dustin got out the tambourine.
He did. Mm-hmm. He was shaking the tambourine
at the beginning of that track.
Yeah, yeah,
he was.
He even
had his guitar down and he was holding a microphone singing. That's happen.
Right. He was.
Anyways. What was one that stood out to me was a song that I'd never heard him play live. It was off of Palms.
I knew you were gonna say this.
It was a song that was one of my favorite off of that record. But I didn't think it was a song that I'd ever play live because, as far as I knew, it wasn't really a fan favorite. I didn't, among my friends that I know, the Thrice fans, they're not into the song. But it's Just Breathe off the Palms album, and it was in the set list, and I knew it was going to be in the set list because I'm one of those guys that goes on the sites where people list the set list for the bands that were on the previous tour dates. Like, oh, what did they play? And I saw that it was on the set list, and I was really excited to hear it, and I was not disappointed. It was fantastic. Just Breathe.
Yeah, I felt like Just Breathe. I was looking forward to it because I didn't know they were going to play it because I peeked, right? I peeked behind the curtain to see what they're going to play. So I was kind of anticipating it. And then, like, that whole end to the set before the encore, the whole end to that, lyrically, two of my favorite songs from the new record are Robot Soft Exorcism and Dandelion Wine. And I was really anxious to hear Dandelion Wine live because I am a musician and it makes my like brain hurt to think about trying to perform it because it's so complicated timing wise and instrumentation wise. And it was just,
the dynamics in the song are incredible and they came through perfectly live
because it's so patient. It takes so long and then boom. Just fantastic. And then that backed up with like Like, that's me listening to hear something for the first time. And then it's almost like the comfort food. It's like the, you know, it's like the Popeye's chicken sandwich at the end there when they went long defeat, fire breather. Oh my gosh. I didn't know if we'd ever hear that live again. And then, of course, the earth will shake, which is
a traditional closer.
It is a traditional closer. And it's an amazing, going back to like what Dustin Kendrew and all of them and Thrice kind of provide for a lot of us. I think that the earth will shake. You know, I usually get to hear them once a year. That's kind of like they go on tour, and it's usually like once a year we get to hear them. I am somebody who, and not that you both aren't this, but just for myself, I'm somebody that really needs to hear explicitly, it's going to be all right. Like, you're going to be okay. I need someone to like look me in the eyes and say it sometimes. And this song is somebody like desperately bellowing and belting out that we can have hope and we can look forward to being okay. And so for me, it's like a, I don't know, maybe it's part of like a calendar rhythm for me where I just always feel like, oh, thank goodness this is happening to me right now, that my ears are exploding with this song playing.
Well, one other thing about this show was we went in not knowing much about the opener. I had heard the band name before. The band was Touché Amour, and I had known of them but never really listened to them much. You know, that's okay. It's okay to not have listened to music, you guys. You know, sometimes you know you talk about music a ton. You can't just know all of the music. But Touché Amour, they killed it.
Oh yeah,
I loved their sound, and I was completely into it, having no expectations. I was blown away.
And isn't it Touché Amour? There is an accent there.
Yeah. I like pronouncing things correctly.
Sure.
Touché Amour. Yeah. Oh yeah.
So Jeremy Bohm, who I mentioned, who has the podcast. We walked in and they had started like right when we got into the show, and I was captivated. I was so locked in. I think I told Jesse like immediately. I was like, I'm buying their album like immediately. It was like the first thing that I did as soon as the show was over, is I went straight to the booth, and all the listeners at home, like, get it, their new record Lament, it's just so well done. It's different, and there's a super awesome little surprise on the record. One of our favorite songwriters, Jesse, and I think Aaron can put up with him, but Andy Hull comes on, and it was like bells. I didn't know he was on the record. I brought it home, I threw it on the turntable, and then the A side ends, and all of a sudden on the bridge, the voice of Sweet Baby Jesus Christ, Andy Hull, just like, I mean, he has one of the most beautiful voices I've ever heard. His voice comes in, and it's just like, wow, you have this sort of like post-hardcore almost spoken word vocalist. It's a little Me Without You ish for listeners. Like, if you're thinking of like, think Me Without You, but more hardcore. And then Andy Hull comes in with parallel. This melody that's just like, it's like putting a comforter on top of the music. It's just incredible. The show was tight. It was a perfect table setting for Thrice, I thought. Aaron, you were there.
And I wasn't familiar with Touche Amore at all before, so I think I came in like halfway through their set, not really knowing what to expect or if I should show up in time to see them. But I really wish I had been there for the entire set because they were really, really good. And I don't remember a whole lot about them, but they were really, really good. And I have listened to them a little bit since then. And I look forward to seeing them again.
The first ever podcast. That's the name of Jeremy Balm's podcast. He had Andy Hull on, and he's had Dustin Kinzer and lots of other artists on. So if you want to check out another show, I encourage you to go check out his. I also think Jeremy Balm is straight edge. That's a little bit
that's
of a throwback.
Thing still?
I think so. I think he is straight edge. Look at Aaron. Oh, man. You guys can't see him at home but or in your car, wherever you're listening. But he made a face like, what? Like you made a face like you smelled something bad.
Yeah, because I thought, well, I guess I'm just not up on the scene anymore.
Anyway, what a show, though. It was a fantastic show. I think we'll end there tonight, and we'll pick up our conversation again. We've been to some other great, great gigs that we'll catch up on. And more are coming. It's not really going to stop. We mentioned Andy Hull. He's coming in a couple months. We'll be at that for sure.
Yeah, so this is going to be a two-parter.
It is. It's a two-parter.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Thanks for hanging out, everybody. Shows are happening everywhere. We really encourage you to get some tickets if you feel comfortable getting out to a show, supporting some bands. It's time, and if you're not getting out to shows, buy their music. There's a lot of new stuff that's been coming out. Don't just stream it. Buy it. Buy the music. Buy downloads. Buy some vinyl. It's fun. You can buy vinyl. It looks cool, and it comes with a digital download. So why not do it? Support the bands. But thank you for hanging out. We want to thank our network, Pantheon. They've got some cool stuff coming out all around the holiday time, so be on the lookout for that. We also want to thank our sponsors. I know, Aaron, you're like spitting into that AKG Harman microphone still.
Mm-hmm.
They've been awesome to hook us up. We got some other sponsorships that are coming down the pike. And so you'll see some stuff on social media. You guys froze. You'll see some stuff on social media. And you'll hear us sharing some new products and some new partners and partnerships that we've got coming along. So. Appreciate you hanging out. Hit us up on the social media. Check out some other shows in the network. Otherwise, have a great day, night, weekend, whatever it is you're doing.
It's NFL draft season, and that means it's time to start thinking about fantasy football. FantasyPoints.com features industry-leading experts and prognosticators using proprietary hand-charted data to help you score more fantasy points. FantasyPoints.com is the place to go for whatever kind of fantasy football you play. Whether you play fantasy football, daily fantasy sports, or do a little bit of everything, Fantasy Points has the meticulously researched content to guide you to victory. And why wait for the fall? Fantasy Points also covers the new spring football league, the UFL. Join the guru, John Hansen, Scott Barrett, Joe Dolan, and other massive names in the fantasy football universe with an exclusive offer. Use code Pantheon for 15% off any Fantasy Points package, including the all-in package, with access to every article, tool, and data nugget that Fantasy Points has to offer. That's FantasyPoints.com and code Pantheon for 15% off at Fantasy Points. FantasyPoints.com, code Pantheon. Score more fantasy points.